Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Tommy, would you agree with this statement? New cars, especially with all the tech, suck.
You know, I wouldn't completely agree with that statement. I think that there are certainly a bunch of new car features that are both good and bad, and some that can detract from the experience. But in this podcast, we're going to talk about some features in new cars that just aren't it. And then later in the podcast, we're going to circle in one of the YouTube legends, Sofyan Bey from Redline Reviews, who's going to give his opinion on the matter
YouTube
as well.
YouTube legends. Huh?
He's a YouTube legend. Yeah, so he's been doing
Redline
it.
Reviews, YouTube legend.
Yeah.
You're sitting next to a legend
here, okay.
And you're telling...
Yeah, for
Sofyan,
sure.
Sofyan, I remember when he got into the business.
Well, he's a YouTube legend
All right,
now.
Then I'm the OG man if he's a legend. All right, so let's talk about features that make cars suck. And I've got a long list of new car features that do not help with the driving experience. In fact, they take away from the driving experience. If you love driving cars, these new features make it horrible. Can we start?
Sure.
All right. Remember we just bought a Toyota 4Runner?
I do.
You have to log in every time you get into the car.
You don't have to log
in. I do. I have to log in every time.
No, what you're talking about is the 4Runner has user profiles. And once you have it set up, once you log in the first time, you can cycle in between the users, right? And then have presets all ready to go, all of your screen settings ready to go. But you're not physically logging in like you are to a computer.
Every time I have to log into a car, and worse than that, you know the little app on my phone, the little Toyota app? It always asks me if I want to allow the car to connect to the app.
Sure.
Every time.
Well, listen.
This is freaking annoying, dude.
And so here's what you do.
Yeah.
Turn it off.
Buy an old 4Runner.
No, turn it off. So I don't have the app. I don't have the app on my phone.
Okay.
I've never once had to log in.
What if it gets stolen? That way you know at least where the car's at.
Okay, so you're pro app now.
No, I'm just saying turning it off. The solution shouldn't be it either annoys the heck out of you or you turn it off. The solution is fix it.
Or maybe there's a setting that's wrong on your phone. That's another possibility.
Okay, it's my fault.
It could be. Because like the Toyota systems, we've had issues with them in the past. But then once you get them set up the right way, they typically work really well. So like we've had a Tundra, right, that's worked really well, a Tacoma.
No, it's never worked really well. It's always been a pain in the butt.
Okay.
I don't need to log into my car, Tommy. Just give me a car that moves me from place A to place B. I don't want to log into it. I don't want to be friends with it.
And get off my lawn.
I don't want to be personalize it to my taste. I want it to be a transportation device, not some kind of a computer that monitors and tracks all of my moves, because that's what's happening. You know that, right?
Well, I actually,
that's exactly what's happening when
you
log into it. It's taking all that data about my life and it's selling it to all these corporations who then use it to try to sell me stuff. And that's only the good part, because I'm sure there are more nefarious ways that that information is being used and could be used. So I don't want my car to track me, so I don't want to log into my car. I think that's a fair thing that, from a privacy point of view, is super annoying, if not dangerous.
I mean, look, there's some really strict rules about privacy and data, right?
Yeah, GM really flaunted those, didn't they?
Yeah, so GM and then also I believe Honda was selling a lot of data to insurance companies, which could impact insurance rates, right? And then they got put on flame for that, and I think that they backtracked on a lot of that. But listen, in my opinion, it is actually kind of a net positive. So for example, in my wife's car, the little Fiat 500, right? She has her profile. She drives around. It's got her music. It's got all of her presets. And then when she's done driving, I get in, I push the button, and then it goes to my profile. And I have all my musics, right, and all my settings. So I actually think that works pretty well. And look, I maybe you're having issues with the Toyota, which I'm sorry about. But for the most part, I kind of think that user profiles are fairly well integrated into a lot of new cars.
You know, there's that saying, Tommy, when you're not paying for something, you're the customer. You're not the customer. You're the product.
Well, I pay for the Fiat.
No, but not that feature. So that's what the company is selling to provide you. Your information, your preferences, your location, your driving habits, that's what the company is selling to pay for that feature.
Well, great news is every car pre-2010, you don't have that problem.
Exactly.
So I don't agree with that one at all. And actually, you love it in the Tesla. Every time we've owned a Tesla, you get in and you push your name, Roman. Every single time.
Yes, because you always change my seat preference and I could never get it back and exactly to where I want it, right?
But that's the purpose of profiles.
No, you can have a button in the car that says seat preference number one.
Sure.
And that does the same thing without giving away all that information.
Yeah, okay, but what about your phone connection, right? If I'm driving a Tesla, so it's up to mine, you go to your profile, it goes to your phone. Right. You like that. So all of a sudden, things start sounding pretty useful. No,
I'm just saying the reason I have to do it that way in the Tesla is because I don't have the little buttons that let me do like preset one, preset two, preset three.
Right, doing the same thing, right?
Shall we move on to the next one?
Sure, what's the next one?
And this has been an ongoing issue since we've been doing this back in 2009. And now, of course, it's morphed into user car experience AI. So once upon a time, you could try to talk to the car and it would try to do things like help you navigate, help you set the temperature, and then you had to speak in a certain way and had to have certain command words. Of course, now the car has AI, so it's supposed to be able to, you know, actually understand what you're saying. And once again, it's super frustrating. So I'll give you an example, all right? I was trying to figure out how to turn on auto hold. I think this was, I didn't know if the car had it or not. I forget what car it was. It was one of our test cars. And so if you go to the car and you say, hey, Mercedes, I think it may be the Mercedes, turn the temperature to 68, no problem. Mm-hmm. Change the radio station to KBCO, no problem. But turn on auto hold, forget it.
Okay.
Can't help you with that. And it's not that hard of a feature to turn on, right? I mean, it's something that the car either has or doesn't have, but the system, even though it's artificial intelligence, isn't smart enough to say, I don't know what that is, or this feature isn't available in this car, or I'll be happy to turn it on for you, or push this button. I got none of those answers.
So you just want a smarter AI?
I just want, if you're going to have it in the car, it has to work all the time. Because what ends up happening is, if it doesn't work once, then you're like, okay, this is kind of crap. And if it doesn't work twice, you just completely give up on it. And you're like, what's the point of this? And I think most people are like that. And it hasn't changed, even with AI. You know, you cannot, because as the cars become more technologically advanced, as the manufacturer hides more things in the menus, as the menus get deeper, it's much harder to figure out where, like, basic stuff that once upon a time used to be very easy, like heated seats, right? Some cars have buttons and some cars don't. Mm. I'll give you an example. We just sold our Ranger Raptor, and if you wanted to lock it, the lockers, those are in the screen. Mm-hmm. There's not a button for them. And so if you want to go find that, one way you could potentially do that is, hey, Ford or whatever the trigger word is, turn on my rear locker. But it won't do that.
Yeah, I mean,
And so I'm like, if it doesn't do it when you try it the second time, you just, once again, you kind of throw up your hands and you go, this thing is useless. And it may not be useless, but it's either got to work 100% or it's useless, in my mind.
Okay.
Nothing to say to that?
No, I don't have any response to that. I think that, in my opinion, all of like the talking systems, unless it's for text messages, I just do it myself.
But that's Apple CarPlay. That's a whole different thing. I mean, I'm talking about the native.
Yeah, but some of the native systems now, like I think the Google systems can integrate with your phone as well to actually respond to texts and things.
Yeah, like Apple CarPlay. I'm talking about actually interfacing with your car.
I just don't use that. I don't want to talk to my car.
Well, first of all, let's say you get in the car. So auto hold, if you're wondering, is when you come to a stoplight or a stop sign, you push the brake down, mm-hmm. and then the car just holds you so you don't have to keep your foot on the brake. Yeah. It doesn't crawl, basically.
I'm a big fan of.
Or creep.
And I know that this is not a popular opinion, but if I can't figure something out, I'll go to the owner's manual.
And there is no owner's manual.
But there always. No, that's not true. There always is an owner's manual.
Sometimes it's in the.
And that's fine. But if I have to go into the screen to find it, I will. Because I just think that, like, that's why owner's manuals exist, right? I don't really want to talk to my car. I can just go to the book and it'll tell me if I have it or not. And I think that's the best solution.
The problem with owner's manuals, and this is also an issue that goes way back. So that's the standard solution. Well, crack open the owner's manual. First of all, they're like 400 pages. Second of all, there's an index, but oftentimes when you're looking for something, it's not indexed the way that you think it should be indexed. So you may be looking for like tire pressure, mm-hmm. right? And you'd be like, okay, I'll look up tire. And so you're looking up tire and there's no thing called tire pressure, right? It's in like specifications.
Sure.
And it's not indexed. So diving into the owner's manual becomes this like...
Look, we're smart people.
Like jungle of information, yes, that you can't navigate.
We're smart people, and the owner's manual, we're also forgetting too, if you spend $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on a car, in my opinion, you should probably read that owner's manual cover to cover. Anytime, no,
who
genuinely,
does that, dude?
Genuinely, I do. Anytime I buy even a used car, I read the owner's manual.
Cole, have you ever read your owner's manual? He's shaking his head no. Nobody does that,
but
dude.
I think as car enthusiasts, like, we should have the responsibility to understand how our cars work, right? So I do actually.
Now you're just arguing for the sake of arguing.
No, genuinely, when I bought that Aston Martin, the first night I did, I read the owner's manual cover to cover. Because there's some stuff I didn't know. Like, I didn't know how to set the trip computer, right? It's different in that car. And I think if you're going to invest that much in a car, you should understand how the features work. And look, the problem with us is we drive a different car every 2 days.
I don't take that. I think that's actually not an excuse. I think that's actually the perfect scenario because, look, if you create a system where the owner gets in the car and like that immediately knows how to do it, it's intuitive.
Sure.
And it's smart. And it's well designed. And as automotive journalists, the excuse always is, and I've been thinking about this a lot, is, well, we get into every car. So if you own this car, after a week or two or three, you would know how to figure it out. I don't need to figure it out. I want the company to figure it out so that when I get in the car, I know how to use it immediately. Yeah. That's their task. That is not my task.
But there's intuitive design. I agree, right? It should be designed well. But then there's also the fact that you own the vehicle, and that is your sole vehicle. So for example, with that little Fiat.
Is it though your sole vehicle? Don't most people own in America like 2.5 cars? Isn't that the statistic? So most people don't just have one car.
So they own two. We drove 137 cars last year. I think someone can figure out two cars. They're not expected to figure out 137 cars a year.
2.5 cars.
Yeah, exactly right. But like with that Fiat, I couldn't figure out how to do something. Like right. I was having issues with the horn and the key, right?
You're just making my point.
No, but listen to me.
How come you have an issue with a horn?
Because when it locked the car, the horn would go off every time. It was annoying, right? Uh-huh. Now, in a press car, I probably wouldn't care because I'm giving it back in 3 days. But because this is my car, I went into the owner's manual. I looked it up, locks and accessibility. And then I went into the screen and I figured out and fixed it. And now it's fixed for the next 2 years that I own the car, right? And I never think about it.
So I'll give you an example. We just bought this Tremor. Mm-hmm. And I was driving it home and I wanted to, I'll go back to Auto Hold because I like Auto Hold. So I was like, hey, I need to turn on Auto Hold. So I tried it. I was like, hey, Ford, turn on Auto Hold. No clue. No clue what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, so now I got a deep dive. First of all, I didn't know if the truck had it or not.
Uh-huh.
So then you go and you use your phone AI, which half the time is wrong. So this whole AI revolution is actually, in a lot of ways, worse because oftentimes the stuff that it comes back with is absolutely wrong. But eventually I figured out that the truck had it. Okay? So now I know that it has it because it doesn't say it has it.
Yeah.
And then you go into the menu screen and you've got a whole bunch of different options. You've got settings. You've got features. You've got vehicle. You've got general. Which one of those does Auto Hold live under?
Well, I got the video right here.
Yeah.
Instructional. It's 1 minute long.
Yeah. I found that video and figured it out. That's how I had to do it.
But then once you figured it out, you never have to touch it again. You got it. It's in your head,
but
right?
Why can't I just, if you're going, once again, you're making my point. Hey, Ford, turn on Auto Hold. And the truck, if it's smart enough, right, should be like, yeah, no problem. Auto Hold is on. Right? Because all I'm doing is toggling it on. And yet the vehicle with its AI is not smart enough to do that for me. And so I just throw up my hands. I'm like, okay, now I got to go into this, you know, journey, figure out how to turn this thing on.
All right. Well, let's see what the comments say.
And some Fords have it and some Fords don't.
Yeah, but
the Bronco we just bought, does it have it?
I don't know. But I don't really care.
The sink.
It's not a feature I care about.
But you would think that like if you're and then that's the other problem, Tommy. The versions of whatever software the vehicles are running is different. Right? So it's not even like all Fords are the same. So you say, well, if you own the car, you would think that it would keep you in the brand if you finally like learned how to operate BMW's iDrive or if you learned how to operate Ford Sync. But they have different versions of that program because they have different, I suspect.
Well, they have to. If they didn't evolve the system, Dad, we'd all be Henry Ford driving Model Ts.
No, but I'm saying, right? But they don't all have the same version of Sync. They all have different ones.
Sure.
And so things and menus are positioned differently in different Fords, and that's super frustrating.
And if you're driving every single Ford product on a daily basis, heck yeah, that's annoying. If you're like my mom that drives one car.
You'll never agree with me anything I say.
Well, I think that this is like the common journalist trope where you complain about like, oh, they moved this thing. It doesn't matter if you own the car. And I bet our viewers will agree.
I think it matters. I think even if the people own the car, they'll be frustrated by it.
Because they're not, why would they be? So they drive one Ford for 10 years. Why does it matter if the Ranger is in a different position than an Explorer?
No, I'm saying even if they're a two Ford family, the sync system will be different.
Okay, so
in
they
those
drive
two Fords.
They drive two cars in 10 years. I think they can figure out.
I don't think the average person keeps their car.
9 years is the average car ownership in the U.S., 9 years.
So most people probably don't have the latest and greatest.
Yeah.
So they're still using cars.
So it's not really a problem, right? They've got that car figured out.
So there you go. It will be a problem.
I mean, this is like when Ford went from the planetary gear set in 1927 to the sliding gear in 1928, right? I'm sure there were some people that were upset and be like, the clutch does not do what the clutch is supposed to do, right? It's a different position.
Do you want to help kids with their feelings but aren't sure how? You're not alone. Research shows many adults struggle to support kids' mental health, but help is here. Backed by experts at the Nationwide Children's Hospital, the Kids Mental Health Foundation offers free resources to help you create a supportive environment for the kids in your life. Visit kidsmentalhealthfoundation.org for more, because kids' mental health starts with us.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
And I've got Fords.
It's not. We are living. It's not, Tommy. That was an obvious improvement, right? So things like going from a carburetor to fuel injection, or going from non-ABS to ABS, these are obvious improvements that make the car better. We are now in a period where things are being changed for the sake of change, and they're not better. I'll give you a very short list of things that aren't better. Door handles that slide in and out.
I agree with that one.
Much worse than the standard ones, all right?
For sure.
Vents that are controlled not by mechanical hand use, but inside the system.
I agree. That's a good one.
This is not. And the biggest classic one is the transmission, right? Once upon a time, you had the shifter that was on the column and the ones that kind of went back and forth. Now there's like at least 20 different ways to put your car in gear. Rotary knobs, buttons, shifters, right? And these are not things that make the car better. They're just different. And in a lot of ways, they're not different. They're worse.
But that's always been the case. In the 1980s...
I don't think we've ever lived through a time where, for the most part, like we used a key to start the car.
But,
every car had a key.
Let me speak. Yes. We're forgetting all the things, all the ways that cars have gotten better. Cars are safer than they've ever been. They have more airbags than they've ever had. They have better driver assistance than they've ever had. They last longer, even though people disagree, but they have longer warranties than they've ever had in the history of the car. When's the last time you saw a flat tire, right? So it's easy to nitpick these little things, which I agree about.
I don't think they're little things. I think they're things that make the car super
frustrating. Yeah, like door handles are dumb, right? We don't need to reinvent the door handle. But then
Here's another one. How about the wheel? We're reinventing the wheel. There's nothing better than just a round steering wheel. And yet now wheels come in like 1,500 different octagons and pentagons and, squares and squirmels.
Sure.
It's just a horrible. And I know I sound like an old man, but dude, we literally are reinventing the wheel and it's not better.
But look, these things have always occurred. In the 1950s, Ford went to a push-button transmission on the Edsel, right?
And it didn't work, and they went back.
They went back, and now we're back to push-buttons.
So we've forgotten that lesson.
A lot of manufacturers had square steering wheels in the 50s, and they went circle, and now they're square. Companies throughout the years will experiment with things that don't work. For example, like talking cars in the 1980s. Your door is ajar, right? That was kind of an interesting thing. They went away from it.
But
pop-up headlights, right? Another trend that they went away from. So innovation, it takes mistakes, right? It takes trying things, and some things work and some things don't.
But you're copying bad ideas. So it's obvious that it's not working. Let's take the door handles. Tesla, I don't know if Tesla invented them, but they certainly popularized them. It's obviously that people hate them. It's obvious that people hate haptic controls with, let's go back to Cadillac with the Q. It was very obvious to me that this was a much worse, much less intuitive, much less comfortable, much less elegant way to do something. And yet today, here we are, where basically every new car manufacturer, even high-end car manufacturers, are using haptic buttons. I think the best example of that is Mercedes has discovered and pioneered and invented the best possible way to move your seat. It was a little tiny seat on the door.
Yeah, I agree.
It was so intuitive, and now they've gone to some haptic bullshit.
And there are mistakes. Yeah, that was a terrible decision.
Where now I'm struggling with adjusting my seat because I'm pushing it forward, but it's not a push thing. And yet here we are, manufacturers copying all of these bad ideas. I was with Ford, and I was meeting with the designer, and he was so happy that they were able to incorporate. He said he worked hard. This was on the Nautilus. Mm-hmm. He said they worked very hard to move the switches from the traditional vent controls into the
screen.
And I looked at him, and I'm like, really? That was the hill you're going to die on?
I think
you're
right.
The guy's super cool, but I'm like, this is just, you didn't make it better.
Listen to the words I'm saying. You are 100% correct.
Yes.
100%. There are mistakes that we're making, like the screen vents are terrible, like the retractable door handle's terrible, right? We're making big mistakes, and I agree that the haptic controls are terrible. So I think it is important to say, to call out these bad trends, right? That's our job. But it is also important to realize the advances that we've seen in the automobile, right, that have made the car better. There's a reason that you don't want to drive that 1968 Mustang, right? You said it yourself. I don't like driving that 1968 Mustang, and that's because it has bad brakes. It has bad suspension, it's slow, and it gets very poor fuel economy, right? And these are all things that we have addressed through technology. So I don't want to just throw up my hands and say, whoa, no technology, right? I think it's important to appreciate the technology that exists, like independent suspension, right? Modern shock absorbers, modern construction abilities, right? And paddle fitments.
I think I would like driving that Mustang if it was in the same condition that it left the showroom floor. But there's a lot of issues with that Mustang.
I think it's not far off, actually. I mean, the brakes, four-wheel drum brakes, are never going to be that good.
The radio doesn't work?
Sure, the radio doesn't work. But even if it did work...
The fuel gauge doesn't work?
Even if the radio did work, would you want to listen to AM radio?
Yeah, sure. It'd be kind of cool. It'd be nostalgic. The fuel gauge doesn't...
You would listen to AM radio?
Sure. I'll listen to AM radio. You bet.
Really? What are you going to listen to on AM radio?
I'll tell you the thing that scares me the most about that Mustang. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with how it operates or how slow it is or how the brakes work, which they don't. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that it doesn't have headrests. That's what scares me the most. And that's a practical thing.
That's the thing. When headrests started becoming popular in the late 60s, early 70s, people complained about them. They said, this is uncomfortable. Why is my head resting on something, right?
Yeah, but you can separate why people complained about something just because they were grumpy. And
Well, that's kind of what we sound like a little bit.
No. We're professionals. We do this. We drive a lot of different cars. And I can very easily point to things that are stupid and make the car worse and not be a grumpy old man because gosh dang it, in my day, you know, we had to start the car. Now you have a starter that, you know, may fail. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about stuff that manufacturers and designers are copying from other vehicles that literally make the car worse.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
things.
Talking about. I'm not talking about like good innovation. Yeah. I'm talking about, I'll give you another example of that. And you just said this, and part of it is because we're on this road, right? But I love driving cars.
Sure.
To me, getting in a car and driving it is one of the biggest pleasures in life. It's my moment of zen. It's where I get to kind of sit back and think about my day. And what I don't like is where we're at right now with the semi-autonomous driving, right? Where you have to either drive the car or monitor the car. I want to either drive or be a passenger. And right now we're in that weird middle zone mm-hmm. where you can't do that.
Sure.
I'm kind of like, if you're a manufacturer, and I know we're slowly working toward level 3 autonomy, but I'm like, you know, just give me level 5 or don't put it in the car.
Yeah, but if you say don't put it in the car, then you get rid of automatic emergency braking.
No, I'm not talking about emergency braking.
That's a driver assistance function.
That's a safety function like a seatbelt. I'm not saying get rid of
but
that.
But at one point, now we consider it like a seatbelt. But when that technology debuted...
And a lot of people hate that, Tommy. There are situations... Also, I don't think that's also very finely tuned. When we first had our first Tesla, you'd go into an underpass, which cast a shadow on the highway coming into Boulder, and the thing would go into emergency braking.
But I can account on two occasions driving with you where that system saved our biscuits.
You're saying
once I was driving and once you were driving. I remember we were driving an F-150 once, and we were looking at a house out the window. Uh-huh. Traffic stopped completely.
Right.
Remember this?
Yes.
In Illinois, and that F-150 hit the brakes so hard that we avoided the accident.
But you can have autonomous braking without having autonomous driving.
Agree.
The two are the
but
two
it's a
don't
fine line between like, oh, I don't want auto steering. Oh, I don't want adaptive cruise control. Oh, I don't want the car to do anything, right? And then you end up in the 1960s.
The problem, Tommy, is ideally you would have a system where you go into the car and you turn on autonomous or whatever version level of autonomy they have, be it 2 or 3, mm-hmm. right? Or you just drive yourself. But now all that is creeping in to every car that I drive. Hmm. So I just, there's no button that says turn this crap off. It's always like, sure. Well, lane keep is on, or lane centering is on, and then you have to physically turn it off, and you have to turn it off individually for each feature.
Yes,
right.
I agree.
So that's also because I hate getting in the car, and all of a sudden I'm driving along, and the car starts like jerking the wheel out of my hand because maybe I got too close to the middle line, mm-hmm. right? Driving the way that normal people. It's so annoying. I'm just don't do that. Just either be autonomous or don't be autonomous, but don't have this weird in-between thing.
All right, folks. Well, I think we should transition to our guest speaker. So Sofyan came on the show here. We were on a press drive in Montana. So we're going to cut to that footage now, talk about some good and bad cars we've driven, and then we'll continue this conversation with Sofyan. The Volkswagen Tiguan, we'll tell you all about it right now. So imagine driving something like 200 brand new cars in a year. Well, today, I'm with my good friend Sofyan, who does that every single year.
That number gives me anxiety, Tommy. I guess 200 is a good guess. It could be more than that. Most likely it's more than that, because I think that number only includes the press cars that I drive at home every week.
Yeah, so Sofyan from Redline Reviews, one of my best friends, and he is one of the most seasoned now automotive guys in the industry. He goes on all the press trips and gets all the press cars. So we're here in Montana, actually, on location. We're on a press drive right now, right?
Yeah, we are driving the brand new third generation Volkswagen Tiguan, their best-selling model here in America, so their most important model.
Yeah, for sure. And the way that these press trips work, in case you're wondering, is the manufacturer will typically fly you somewhere like sunny California or rainy Bozeman, mm-hmm, Montana. Yep. And then they give you the car for a few hours. You drive around and you come up with your impressions. And then Sofyan makes a video, puts it on Redline Reviews. We do the same thing for TFL. Mm-hmm. And then typically I go home, but Sofyan goes from one trip to another to another. So where are you going next?
I'm actually going to go home for like 8 hours, but then I have to go to Savannah, Georgia for the Ionic 9 drive. So I get to sleep in my own bed at least for a night.
8 hours is a pretty good gap for you, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but no, Sofyan's a great guy, and he's just so busy. So I thought it'd be cool to kind of talk about some of your favorite and then maybe least favorite cars that you've driven.
Okay.
So walk me through. I know that it's funny, like there's so many that sometimes we have to like look back to see what we've driven.
Yeah.
But what are some of like the highlights and the lowlights recently?
Well, so are we only talking about the cars I've driven this year so far?
It can be whenever.
Whenever, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one of the most recent cars that I drove that I actually really missed driving was the new Lotus Emira with the 2-liter turbo from Mercedes-AMG.
Really?
I don't know if you had a chance to drive the Emira yet.
No, talk to me about it.
Yeah,
what's
so
it like?
The Emira is the replacement for the Evora. It's essentially their last internal combustion sports car before they go all electric, although I feel like they might backtrack that with the way the industry's going. But it looks amazing. It looks like a Ferrari with a mixture of a McLaren. Mm. The first, I guess, model year that came out, it had the Toyota supercharged V6 with a manual, which is great. You could also get it with a 6-speed auto, but don't. But then they also offered it with the 2-liter turbo from the Mercedes-AMG, like CLA 45.
Okay.
And it makes like 400 horsepower. It has a dual clutch. That thing was a riot.
Really?
Like, it was one of the lightest, most pure cars that I've ever driven, and it constantly, like, if you guys watch my video on it, it reminded me why I love driving, because we're so used to Tommy driving, like, these mommy crossovers, these EVs that are heavy, that drive themselves, so to drive something that felt very pure and very mechanical and alive was just refreshing.
Very cool. And that's an automatic-only car.
Correct.
Right?
It only comes with the 8-speed dual clutch, but it has proper launch control. It shifts really quickly. And even though I missed the manual, I really liked how much faster that car was and just how lightweight, because, again, the engine was lighter technically, so it felt a little bit better balanced, I thought, than the V6, but I thought that was one of my favorite cars I drove this year. Another car that I drove that really instantly came to mind was the new Audi RS e-tron GT Performance.
Wow.
Which I think your dad drove that in
Vegas, right?
Yeah. On the drive. And that thing was just bonkers, like batshit fast. Like, I got 2.2 seconds 0-60 all day long in that thing, and it's so fast it literally makes you feel sick.
That's a car that's that's based on the Taycan, right?
Yes. Same platform. It's basically in between the Taycan Turbo S and Turbo GT. It's got like over 900 horsepower or something like that, but it's just paired with the suspension that had that adjustable suspension, the hydraulic plus the air suspension, it just felt like it defied the laws of physics. So, I mean, the car was like almost 200 grand, but at the same time, it just felt like a completely different driving experience from behind the wheel.
So the old one, I thought, was kind of in this weird place, that e-tron.
Yeah.
Because, like,
it kind of felt like Audi couldn't go all the way or they'd start competing with Porsche.
Right.
Did you feel the same way about the new one, like they were holding back a little?
You know, I thought that, because I drove the Turbo GT in Spain last year, and that car was also crazy. But at the same time, it was a little too raw. The Turbo S was also more comfort-oriented, but I thought that Audi found a better middle ground between the two trims, and Audi is also a lot cheaper. It's like 60 grand cheaper than the Turbo GT, and I think still like 30 grand cheaper than the Turbo S Taycan. So
okay,
it to me it seemed like the better buy. Now granted, it's not a perfect car. The infotainment system was not good. It was laggy and slow. It was their older infotainment system as well, and that was kind of the whole sour point of the interior, but it still had your beloved buttons that you like. So
yes. Buttons. No, that's awesome. I'm going to give you a car I liked and then a car I kind of disliked.
Okay.
And it's actually the same car. So the car I was pretty impressed with, I just recently drove the 4Runner Trail Hunter.
Okay.
And it's too much money.
Yes.
It's $70,000. But I do kind of like that it comes with the whole kitchen sink for that price.
Right.
So a lot of people are buying the 4Runners and then they lift it and they do the snorkels and then they do the roof racks and that kind of thing. And I like that that Trail Hunter comes with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I thought that was pretty cool and it was very good off-road. And like, I like the new turbo engine.
Yep.
I think there's a lot to like there. But then, weirdly, I didn't really like the limited version.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that the limited version of the 4Runner was a little silly. I liked the interior, then we had this kind of cool brown interior.
Okay.
And I liked all the soft touch points, but like, I wasn't that impressed with the full type 4-wheel drive system. And I just kind of feel like if you're gonna get a 4Runner, why would you want to put ballet shoes on it?
That's true,
you know,
because it's got the bigger 20-inch wheels, I think, right on the
yes limited. Exactly. And it would be one thing like if Toyota didn't have a Highlander and a RAV4 and a Grand Highlander and what am I missing, the whole lineup. But I kind of felt like if you're gonna get a luxury SUV within the Toyota lineup, just get the Lexus.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that makes total sense. I guess what you're saying is Toyota should only offer like the baser trims and the off-roady trims.
I kind of feel like that. Yeah. And then because Lexus has that whole lineup with the GX.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of takes care of that premium off-road space. So that was kind of one of my disappointments. Is there anything you've driven that you didn't like, Sofyan?
You know, actually there are. I had to think about it a little bit while you were chatting, because I knew that question was coming at some point. But you know, we drive a lot of new cars, and to be honest, there aren't really any bad cars.
No.
There are not really any bad cars. There are just cars that don't necessarily appeal to me as an individual.
Yeah.
One of those cars was the new Cadillac Escalade IQ.
Really?
I did not like the way that car drives.
For one,
Tommy, it feels like you're driving around a house. It's so heavy and wide. Like, it's over 9,000 crushing pounds. And I don't know if you noticed, Tommy, have you driven that car yet?
Yes, I was on the launch.
That's right, you were. So I don't know if you remember the mirrors, the side mirrors. They have, like, a magnification for it.
Yep.
And do you know the reason why?
It's because, it's, like, over 83 inches
for
something.
For the gross vehicle weight. So it's basically a commercial vehicle.
Yes, it's basically a heavy-duty truck.
Correct. Yeah. And that just kind of annoyed me because it made me, like, not be able to reconcile where, like, the proportions are with that car, because it's already huge. But then every time you put your foot down, Tommy, I just had it for a week, the car torque steers and bucks around. You have to fight to keep it in a straight line. And I was like, this is, like, downright dangerous. Like, picture somebody who isn't used to something this fast or this heavy, and they're sitting there like doing 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds, and all of a sudden they have to stop, they're gonna crash, they're gonna floor it and not be holding onto the wheel and then crash into something. So
interesting.
So I was not a fan of that. I think Cadillac really needs to do something about the tuning of that, because for a $150,000 vehicle, I found it to be unacceptable how it was torque steering everywhere. And then also the ride, Tommy, I was not impressed with it. On the 24s as well.
So that car, I think what's interesting about that car and what Sophie is kind of talking about is it has a gross vehicle weight rating of over 8,500 pounds. Mm-hmm. So it lands in like a new classification like that trucks are in.
Yep.
So it's got like the flat side mirrors, which you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I like that thing is because it's kind of like a luxury Hummer.
Yeah.
It's just so ridiculous. I mean, it serves almost no purpose. Mm-hmm. Other than to move, like, one person to and from their houses in Beverly Hills.
Right.
But I do
I do understand what you're saying, where, like, it's so over the top, it's a little flawed.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I'm not really the biggest fan of the Hummer either.
You like, really?
I mean, it's a great
looking
car.
You're a good citizen, Sofyan.
I just think it's excessive. Just like the Escalade IQ, like, there's no need for it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just drove the new Cadillac Vistiq, which I technically can't talk about how it drives just yet. Mm-hmm. But that thing is like a baby Escalade is what they called it. And it's actually, like, if you look at Cadillac's claim, the Vistiq is faster 0 to 60 than the Escalade IQ.
Which, is it really?
Yeah, because it has, like, it weighs 3,000 pounds less, and it basically gets to 60 in 3.7 seconds versus under 5 seconds for the Escalade IQ. So, and, like, it's just, it still has the third row. Now, it doesn't have as much space on the inside, but I would say that car is probably going to be way easier to live with on a daily basis. And it's, like, 50 grand cheaper, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, my thing with the... I'm actually going to go the other way, where if you're going to get the Escaladic... IQ.
Yes.
I kind of think you should just get the new long version.
Okay. The L.
The L. Yeah. Exactly. Like, if you're going to go to a 9,000 pound Cadillac, mm-hmm. you might as well do a 9,500 pound. Like, just go for the crazy top dog, absurd one. And right. I think that's, like, what Cadillac has always been good at. Mm-hmm. And they kind of struggle a little bit when they go away from the huge thing. But, like, that's as close to a 1969 Eldorado as you can get.
Yeah.
Is this monster SUV that's just absurd.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, it's, like, 227 inches long.
It's crazy.
It's longer than the ESV.
Yeah, it's just absurd. And, like, the trunk in that Escalade is, like, 4 feet long. The front trunk.
Yeah.
You know, you could put, like, we did this thing with Alex Dykes, our buddy, Alex and Otto's, our auto buyer's guide now, where it has, like, a gurney. The trunk is so long in the front of that Cadillac, they have to put, like, a tray in.
Oh, that's right.
Do you remember
right.
the tray? So you could, like, read stuff at the back. So we put him in there, and then we, like, wheeled him out like he had died.
Oh, I need to see that.
Yeah, he did a short about it. It was pretty funny. You bring up a car that I drove on that trip, which I didn't think I was going to like.
Okay.
And I really loved. And that was the Optiq.
Oh, okay.
I thought the Optiq was actually a pretty good value.
I would agree, because it's basically Cadillac's version of the Equinox EV.
Right, which is even cheaper. Mm-hmm. But I felt like it didn't... Sometimes when GM rebadges a car,
right.
it just feels like they put a badge on and didn't change anything. Mm-hmm. But I kind of thought that car did a nice job of feeling upscale and not just like a slightly gussied up like Chevy. Equinox. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that as well, because we drove that the same week, I think, right, that in San Francisco, and that was a shocker, because you don't expect the baby car, like the baby electric SUV, to feel as nice as it does,
yeah.
especially for the price. The range was also pretty agreeable. So I haven't spent a full week with it yet, but I have one scheduled next month, and I'm looking forward to it, because I liked the Equinox EV, so I imagine the Cadillac version should be just as nice, if not nicer.
100%, yeah. I'm going to give you another car I drove lately that I really liked. The new E53 Mercedes.
Oh, I have that scheduled next, or at the end of this month.
Yeah, my dad didn't like it, because he felt like it was very artificial and heavy.
Okay.
But I really dug it. I thought it was super cool.
And was it really fast, too? Because that has, like, the new hybridized inline six or something.
Yeah,
like
it's got, like, the 21 kilowatt hour battery, so it does 40-ish miles.
So it's a plug-in hybrid, too.
Plug-in hybrid, yeah. It's got a huge amount of battery on it, so you can go, like, 40, 50 miles on electricity.
That's impressive.
The DC fast charges, and then you've got that inline six mm-hmm. for when you want to go fast.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So if you're watching this on YouTube, we're cruising around in the mountains here, kind of by Bozeman, and this is the Badger Ski Resort.
Cole? Bridger Bowl.
Bridger Bowl. Thank you, Cole.
Interesting name.
But apparently this is a really legendary... Cole, help me out, producer Cole.
Yeah, it's a cool resort.
It's a cool ski resort here. But what we're going to do is we're just going to pop a U-turn here because we don't need to keep going down this road. But let's talk about this Tiguan a little bit that we're driving. Walk us through the big news here, Sofyan.
Yeah, so this is now built, or it's a comprehensive redesign. It's built on their new MQB Evo. So they switched from MQB Classic to MQB Evo. The car itself is about the same size, although they shortened the front rear overhang. So it's maybe an inch shorter, but it's a little wider. The car, like, is pretty well sized, I think. We have a ton of space on the inside. The back seat's huge. The look of the car, Tommy, kind of reminds me of a Touareg.
Sure.
You remember the Touareg from a decade and a half ago and whatnot.
It's a bold move, Cotton, but I'll let it fly.
I'm a fan of the look, especially the SEL R-Line on the 20-inch wheels. Okay. The engine is now the latest generation EA 888 Evo 5, so we have a new turbo, new cooling, I think, new internals, 201 horsepower, 221 foot-pounds of torque, 8-speed auto. It's also almost 200 pounds lighter, and Volkswagen says that they've also improved the fuel efficiency by as much as 2 mpg combined. Even though this is not a hybrid, I think this is definitely one of my top picks if you don't need a hybrid in this class.
Okay, yeah, a lot of good things you just said there. I think that you're kind of on the money. I mean, this is now the third generation of Tiguan, which the name Tiguan, I just can't get over what an awesome story this is.
Go ahead. You tell me about the name of the Tiguan. Yeah, I'm not quite sure, actually.
You don't know the story? So when Volkswagen was launching the Tiguan, I think it came out in the U.S. for what, 09 model?
09, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Europe, they put out a poll, and I think it was Autosport magazine, and Volkswagen wanted people to, like, give names for their new car.
Okay.
And the winner is a combination of Tiger and Iguana.
That's right.
So okay. Tiguan is a collab between Tigers and Iguanas.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, I don't mind the name. It certainly has recognition in the U.S. because VW did like 95,000 of these, I think, last year. So
yeah, they sell a lot of these. And this is, I think they were saying, the best-selling car globally.
Okay, that makes sense.
Is the Tiguan. This would be a tough car. The thing about this segment is, I mean, it's huge. So let's see if we can name them all.
Oh.
RAV4,
mm-hmm.
CR-V,
yep.
CX-50,
mm-hmm.
CX-5, is that still around?
Oh, yeah, they have both.
Forester.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all the Japanese. No,
Rogue.
Rogue, mm-hmm. You're right.
And Outlander.
And Outlander. And then you've got the Americans. You've got Terrain,
mm-hmm.
Equinox,
yep.
Bronco Sport, Escape.
Yep.
Is Escape still around?
Escape is still around, yeah, for now.
Would we say Hornet? Is that smaller?
The Hornet's more like the Bronco Sport. It's, like, smaller.
Okay,
but so I guess you could include it.
It all kind of bleeds into each other, right?
Right.
And then you've got Tucson.
Yep.
Sportage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what am I missing? That was, like, 38 cars.
I know, right? I think you got them all for the most part, Tommy.
And the thing about this category is because it's the most popular by a long shot in the U.S.,
yeah.
These car companies, they make cars that are not quite homogenized, but they're all so similar,
mm-hmm.
right? Because what these companies do is Toyota's looking at what Honda does, and Honda's looking at what Subaru's doing, and Subaru's looking at what Chevy's doing, and Volkswagen's looking what. So they're like all kind of benchmarking each other, right? Mm-hmm. So like if one company comes out with a 2-liter turbo, then like a couple years later, another company will come out with a 2-liter turbo, right?
Pretty much.
So it's kind of tough, and then the problem is like, as a company, you don't want to do something so outrageous that you're going to put people off.
Yeah.
So you end up in this weird spot where it's tough to kind of differentiate these cars.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to look at some of like the little details. So for example, this Tiguan, I think what it does best, and I used to think Mazda did the best, but I think Volkswagen's taken the cake.
Mm-hmm.
And you said this in your video, is it feels kind of like a budget Audi.
Yes.
You know, very Audi-like in here with the interior design, the fit and finish, the quality of the leather steering wheel, and the premium seat material. It all feels very upscale.
Yeah. I mean, we're also sitting here in the top trim, and this car has massaging seats, Tommy. What other car has massaging seats?
Great point. Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a ton of luxury stuff in this car. So I think that what Volkswagen has done well is the premium side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little pricey on the up top end. So this car is probably 42?
Around 42, yep.
Yeah, which is not unheard of in this category. The others are all, once again, priced pretty similarly.
Yeah.
The thing it doesn't do very well at is the powertrain options.
Yeah, just one powertrain option, at least for now. We have a more powerful version of this engine coming next year. But really what it lacks is a hybrid also, Tommy. Like RAV4 hybrid, for example, makes up over 50%, I think. Same thing with CR-V. So I think Volkswagen is leaving sales like on the table here by not offering a hybrid powertrain.
Yeah, and if you look at the MPG in this car, I think it's 25 combined.
Yes.
Which is just not that impressive, mm-hmm. especially because I know that Volkswagen doesn't want us to say people are cross-shopping this with a RAV4 hybrid, but we know how people work, right?
Yeah. Oh,
people
yeah.
want a small SUV. They're going to look at everything.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to look at like a CR-V hybrid that's going to be in the 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And Easily. Then that's kind of like a it's a big detractor, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because like when you look at, you know, for the same money, you can get like a RAV4 CR-V hybrid, and they get like 38 to 39 mpg like combined, and it's kind of shocking because this only gets 25. So that makes a huge difference, like on longer road trips. Like you can go over 500 miles of range on the hybrids versus this car is maybe like just under 400.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty big difference. Now, some people again don't really like the droniness of a hybrid. Like you get the CVT and the vibration, just the noisy naturally aspirated four cylinder, and they prefer this turbo, which I personally appreciate. But wouldn't it be awesome, Tommy, if they just stuck an electric motor on this powertrain?
That would be perfect.
Like gave us like around 250 horsepower and like 40 mpg.
Yeah, it would be awesome. And the thing is, like you don't need a CVT in a hybrid. For example, Hyundai and Kia, right? They have a turbo hybrid.
Yes.
Right? Which with a normal transmission. So it is possible. I think what Volkswagen does really well is the interior design, and I also think that it's a very comfortable, refined driving experience.
Yes.
You mentioned this, and I agree completely, getting some time behind the wheel. It's very soft, so it doesn't drive anything like a GTI.
No.
It drives, for lack of a better word, very American, where it's a little kind of floaty, right?
Yep.
And soft in the turns. But that does mean on a road trip, because we're in America, it's kind of just comfortable and floats along.
Yeah, comfortable, quiet. The seats are also really cushy. I thought the visibility is good. You can drive this car on a long road trip all day long with very little fatigue. And I think that's the secret like sauce with these compact SUVs.
Right.
They have to do everything for everybody.
Now, speaking of doing everything for everybody, I thought it would be fun to talk to Sofyan, because you have so much experience in new cars and you see all the new trends, to talk about some of the trends that we see in new cars that are both good and some of the trends that we see in new cars that are silly.
Ooh, okay.
And I'll give you an example of a good trend I like and then a trend that I think is really silly. So a trend I really like, and I do think that this Tiguan does it, a lot of new cars now, most of them, in fact, have start-stop, right?
Yep.
So you're driving along, come to a stop sign, hit the brake, engine turns off, you leave the stoplight, engine turns on. That's not new. But what is becoming more common now is when you're driving these cars, right, you pull up to your final destination, you're at the restaurant, you put your foot on the brake, engine shuts off, you put the car in park, and then you can just get out.
Right.
I kind of like that, right? Because if the engine's off, why do I need to push the start button again, right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
A lot of EVs do this. Tesla pioneered this, and I think that's a great thing, right? It's just like a little convenience thing.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. That feature is a nice convenience thing that a lot of people, I feel like, get used to, because I feel like if you take them out of that, put them into a regular car where you have an ignition or a button you have to push on and off, they forget to do that.
Right.
They kind of forget to do that step. For us, it's kind of annoying because, let's say we're doing a walk around and we're getting out of the car, but we want the lights to stay on. It will shut off and you have to sit there and be like, all right, how do I get this car to stay on to show that? But no, that's a great feature, I think, for the ordinary consumer. If you were going to ask me what are some of the things that I really like about some of these new cars with the features, the massaging seats.
You're a big massaging seat guy.
I love the massaging seats, and I love how it's starting to trickle down even to a non-luxury brand like this car, just because I think it helps with fatigue. Like if you're on a long road trip, like my back or my bottom starts to get like sore just from sitting there for hours. And I think it really helps kind of just keep the blood flow going and keeping you alert.
So one thing about this car, though, is you don't get the booty massage.
No.
You just get the back.
Yes.
Is that okay with you? Are you good?
I mean, because I think Ford and Lincoln are the only ones that do the booty massage, or maybe Mercedes does it too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm okay with it because it's a pretty good massage. Like, some of the cars we've tested, like some of the Buicks, have literally just a massage that's not really a massage.
It's like an air bladder.
No, it just literally inflates the bolsters, and it's annoying.
And then you hear it go. It's like listening to Darth Vader in your
Yeah, it just sounds weird, and it doesn't feel good, so I never use those. So I appreciate how this one has, like, 10 different styles of massage, and it also feels like they've pulled it out of an Audi. In fact, you can't even get massaging seats on the Q5.
Interesting.
The new Q5, which just came out, you can't get massaging seats, which doesn't make any sense to me.
So that's a good one. I like that. That's good. Now, I'll give you a feature I think that's silly. We just don't need this.
Okay.
This car has these things called atmospheres, which are these like moods, essentially, right? They're like, if you're an influencer, you call them vibes, right? So you've got lounge, you've got joy, you've got nature, energetic, minimal, and me. That's a vibe. just turns the whole car into a nerd. But when you select these settings, you can kind of see what it does. So it changes ambient lighting, sound profile, instrument cluster, volume. I just don't know why you need this. Like, it's kind of, in my mind, the only real thing that this does is change ambient lighting.
Okay.
So why not just call it ambient lighting instead of lounge?
I guess they were just trying to think of a fancier term. Because this car does have 30 different ways you could change the ambient lighting. But yeah, I get it. And honestly,
do you like that? Would you use that?
I probably wouldn't. But you know, that, you know, showing the atmospheres and what you can customize, it kind of reminds me of another car that I actually really like, and that's the Lincolns with the Rejuvenate feature.
What's the Rejuvenate feature?
So the Rejuvenate feature basically turns your car into a spa. I don't know if you had a chance to sample it, Tommy, but like,
it's all of a sudden a shirtless guy is just in there wearing a towel. Like, what do you mean?
So picture, Tommy, you had a really long day at the office. You're so stressed out. You come home, or you're basically, let's say you're driving an electric vehicle, you need to go charge, but you're so stressed and like anxious. This is where the Lincoln Rejuvenate comes into place. Your car has to be in park. You have to make sure you're outside because the one
the
that I
tested... guy in the car is in the car waiting for you.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Wait, so you're outside?
No, well, because the one that I experienced it in was the Nautilus Hybrid, and that the engine will cycle on and off when you do it because you have to basically be in park, but you basically turn on this like Rejuvenate feature that lasts either 5 or 10 minutes. The entire like 48-inch screen turns into this like waterfall, like nature effect. It starts massaging your seats, it wafts a perfume, it plays this really gentle music, and it just literally makes you like in a zen environment for 5 minutes. And you know what, I thought it was a gimmick, like it was gonna be a gimmick for me, but then I tried it and I was like, this is freaking awesome.
Is it really?
Yeah, it just
When you're in park.
Only when you're in park. And what's great is like my husband Keith, who also sees a lot of the new cars that I test, he's very difficult to please. He came home from a really stressful day on a Friday and I was like, come here and let me show you this. And he was like, what is this? I was like, this is gonna be stupid. But he was like, can we do it again? Like literally after like twice, he was like, I wanna do it again. I was like, because it just was a great feature that I think people are gonna use, and it was just part of the experience.
Wow.
It kinda shows that a luxury brand's going the extra mile.
But you have to be parked.
You have to be parked because you can't be doing that while you're driving, because it does recline the seat. It reclines the seats, and then it like tries to make you like just kind of close your eyes, and it even talks to you, Tommy. It even talks to you and tells you, like, coaches you how to like release your anxiety.
Does it really?
It does, yeah. So one of these days when you guys get the Nautilus or the Navigator, you need to try the Rejuvenate feature.
Okay.
Because I think it's something that you would really appreciate, especially after a long day, and I think a lot of people would use it.
The problem is, like, I just, after a long day, I'll give it a try. You're right. I need to go with a little bit of my, but I typically just want to be home.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I would enjoy sitting in my office parking lot watching Cole judge me through the window as my Lincoln serenades me to wafts me with perfume. You know, like maybe I will. I think that would be cool. Charging.
Yeah.
You know, for like an
EV. It makes sense as an EV because what else are you going to do? But sit in the car.
Like, I don't know if I'm behind these. So Hyundai and Kia also have these like the sounds of nature things.
Yeah.
You remember these?
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that's like a French cafe, which makes me hungry. There's one that is rain that makes me have to pee. Right? Like I can't get behind that. And I think with these things, what do they call them? These ambiances.
Mm-hmm.
You would go into joy when you bought the car and you think, oh, that's cool. And then you wouldn't change it for 9 years.
Okay.
You would forget it's there. So
yeah,
maybe the comments will.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what people think. The other feature, I guess, that I don't like personally are the passenger screens, Tommy.
Passengers, good one,
yeah,
Sophia.
I think they are. Well, for me personally, I'm going to be the driver. I wouldn't really care about the passenger screen. But for me as a passenger, it makes me car sick to stare at a screen that's right in front of me.
Interesting.
I don't get car sick very often. Like, I can be on my phone. As long as we're on these curvy roads where you're driving like Mario Andretti, I'll be fine. But the passenger screens, most of them, they're too dim. You can't see them because they have these filters on them to keep the driver from staring at them. And they don't. And then they don't really offer much in terms of functionality. I mean, yeah, you could plug it into an HDMI, but you can't really mirror your smartphone. It's always on the center screen there. I mean, yeah, you could pull up the GPS and control the audio, but I'm like, what's so difficult about going here?
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's just a flex. Like, here, we have, you know, 50 inches of screen in the car.
Yeah, way too much.
Yeah. Excessive.
Why do you... The passenger screen... Anytime I've been in a car, unless maybe you want, like, Waze going on one and a navigation on another, which I've never needed, but, like, I'm like, a passenger screen is just a worse iPad.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty much.
If I'm going to be entertained by it, I'll just use an iPad or a phone or whatever.
Right.
No, you're 100% right. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a really good one. I'm trying to think of other things I've really liked. Oh, this is an interesting one. Mm. I've only driven one car with this, and I think only one or two models available that have this feature. The Gen 2 Rivian is the first car to be authorized to be sold in the U.S. with the adaptive headlights.
Oh.
And this was a bunch of months ago when I drove this. I think there might be a couple others now in the market.
Okay.
But so forever in Europe, you could have these crazy, I think Audi calls them like the Matrix headlights.
Yeah.
That will adapt to oncoming road conditions.
Like the high beams will.
Yeah. So I could have like my brights on right now, and as a car is coming the other way, it'll actually dim that passenger headlight, or it will adjust the beam so it'll carve out the car coming toward me.
So it like bends the lights.
So they don't get blinded.
That's awesome.
But then it maintains my right side high beam so I can still see down there. I mean, it's incredible. And the U.S. has had such antiquated headlight laws for so long.
Yeah.
That you couldn't have it in the U.S. So you had these cars that were capable of doing amazing lighting patterns, but because of the laws, they were just fixed on and off, right? High beam on off.
Right.
And the Rivian's the first car I've driven that has it actually activated in the States. Very cool piece of technology.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I also had the Gen 2 R1T a couple months ago, and I noticed that as well driving it at night. And I agree with you. It is an amazing piece of technology, so I'm hoping other manufacturers will adjust that. Because like right now, we have those silly auto high beams, which honestly, they piss me off more than actually working right. Because you've probably been in that situation where they come on and you're like, there's a car coming. And you're like, crap, but it's not me. It's the car that's flashing my high beams at somebody in front of me or oncoming traffic. So those still need work. But like the Rivian, how it just kind of bended the light and it just allowed you to still see without, you know, pissing off the other drivers. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, and like the auto high beam too. Some car companies do it very well, and other car companies do it terribly.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited to see the new Matrix lights make their way. On that same vein, something I hate on some new cars, when they get rid of the light switch altogether.
Oh, the headlight control.
You ever see that where they like put it in the screen?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Driving me crazy.
I was literally just in the new GMC Terrain, and that also got rid of it. They put it in the screen. You know, I understand why people don't like that. At the same time, I kind of understand, like, you just put it in auto and you don't touch it.
Yeah, you think so?
Like, you just put it in auto, don't touch it. You either can turn on and off the auto high beams with another button. But I think it's kind of a good thing because there are so many times, I don't know if you've seen it, Tommy, where people drive around with just their DRLs on at night. No headlights. They have instrument panel lights on and they have no rear taillights. And I'm just like, hello, turn on your freaking headlights. So I actually think cars need to put a reminder when that happens because they already have a dust sensor. If they can see that the headlights aren't on or they're not in the auto mode, they should flash a warning and says, hey, idiot, turn on your headlights. So, yeah. Because that's literally what I want to say every time at night when I see somebody driving with no headlights on.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. I mean, maybe now that I think about it, maybe you're right. You never touch them.
Right.
I do this weird thing where I like to go to drive-in movie theaters. And that's a really weird fringe use case. And, like, some cars you can't have the radio and no outside lighting on at all, which is a problem for a drive-in.
That's true.
But that is a tiny, tiny use case. But like, I still fundamentally, there's something inside of me that thinks like the light switch is such a crucial part of driving a car.
Right.
Like putting it in a screen, if there's a screen failure or a glitch something.
That is true.
And your light is on or off and not being able to change it just kind of freaks me out a little.
Yeah, I agree.
Now this is a controversial take, but something I do like a lot is this shift where everything is now column shift.
Oh, okay.
My thing is, like, unless you have a manual transmission, does it really matter where the shifter is? And if it's here, why have it here and take up all the space? Where are you on that?
You know, I don't mind the column shifters. Now, traditionalists, they really like being able to, like, grab a shift lever and you can kind of shift it. Like, it just gives you that satisfying, I'm in control feeling.
Sure.
So I can understand why people are apprehensive of that change, but I kind of agree in the sense that this design saves space and it frees up space in the console for more cup holders, more storage, a big volume dial here where you can, you know, use it to change other things. So I'm okay with it, but again, it's something that people have to get used to, and I think just people are apprehensive to change. I think that's where it comes down to.
Okay, but are you on board with the column shift everything like this?
I think for a car like this, I'm okay with it.
It does. There is something that's a little unusual about this car though. there's no way, this particular Tiguan, there is no way to manually select a gear at all.
Oh, that's right, because there's no paddle shifters.
Yeah, but there's also no, like, toggle on the shifter.
Okay.
Which, I don't know if I like that, because, right. like, living in Colorado, we have a lot of mountains.
Okay.
And even if I don't need to, per se, I'm still kind of used to downshifting on a steep grade.
Right.
But as far as I can tell, there's literally no way to do that in this car.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
Or, like, towing. Not that this tows a lot.
No.
But it is kind of nice being able to have some control over your gears.
Yeah.
And this, what you get is drive and sport, but no ability to control the transmission at all.
No, that is a fair argument. I wonder if the upcoming turbo version
will
have the paddles, because it would make sense.
Yeah.
I would argue that perhaps the typical Tiguan buyer won't even consider. Yeah, they won't care.
And that might be like a niche, like, once again, living up in the high Rockies right. kind of thing.
Right.
Is there anything else you can think of that you're really into or really dislike?
Ooh. Piano black plastic trim. I still hate that. This yes. car has a lot in here.
Yes.
Especially
like on the key.
Yeah, it shows like Folks, scratches and fingerprints. And
we gotta stop putting piano black on keys. This is a terrible plan. The worst key offender, though, by far, are the Hyundai Ace.
Oh, the egg keys, yeah.
So Hyundai do these keys that look like little saucers, like little UFOs. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they look like they're spray painted plastic orbs. Mm-hmm. And they scratch so easily. Mm-hmm. And they look like garbage because they look like some kid lost their Easter egg and then dragged it through the mud. And they get all just horribly dinged up and scratched.
Granted, that key has not been out for a very long, Tommy.
I know, it's
and
a really
see,
bad key.
We see them damaged all the time.
And they look cheap, too.
Yeah. Oh,
that's not good. No, you're right. But like Sophia's pointed out, this car is brand new. And the car I drove yesterday was even worse. This whole center console looked like it had been sandpapered down. Mm-hmm. And it hadn't. It's just that it scratches so freaking easy.
Yeah.
Right? No, that's a good one. There was another one thing that's been driving me crazy. Oh, this is not brand new per se, but like more and more cars are doing it. It needs to die a painful death and quickly. Retractable door handles.
Oh. Yeah. It's gimmicky. It's gimmicky, and it's something that could fail, or in Colorado where you guys are at, like ice can build over it and then they don't pop out.
And like I end up with it's like a Thor Ragnarok situation between me and the door handles whenever I need to get into a Mercedes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'm like, I'll have a key, and then I'll walk away, and the doors will handles will retract, and then I'll walk up, and the door handles will pop out. But then sometimes they don't pop out, like if I leave the car unlocked for right. too long. And then I end up in this epic battle of wills to get into the car, and I'm pushing the buttons on the door and on the handle and on the key, and it's like, just leave the door handle out all the time.
Hilarious.
That's another failure point that needs to stay.
Yeah, so I would agree with that.
That's one for me. But for the most part, I feel like a lot of the new car features that a lot of people hate, I kind of don't mind. Like, all of the safety stuff I think is good. Oh, yeah. For the most part.
For sure.
In Europe, though, they're mandating these, like, speed limit warnings. The little bings and the bongs.
Oh, that's annoying.
Please never make that to the U.S. The Ineos had that for like 3 months, and my dad sold the car because of it. It was so annoying. But yeah, I think that like the blind spot monitoring and the cross traffic alert and the bicycle detection, and this car has the feature where the door right will leave you a warning if there's like traffic coming.
Right, and some actually prevent you from opening the door.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I think Toyota actually does that in Lexus with their cross traffic. Like, if it sees there's somebody coming with the digital latch door handles, it actually will disable them until that car or bicyclist has passed.
That's pretty crazy.
No, that's an excellent feature that could save you from having to, you know, deal with a lawsuit or getting your door replaced.
100%. So those things I'm actually kind of on board with.
Yeah.
Now, Sophia, from what you can tell me, Are there any cars coming up that you're excited to drive?
Coming up well, I guess at the end of this month, I'm going to have the Artura Spider. So I'll have that for just a couple days. And at the same time, I'm going to have an LC500 convertible.
Oh,
I know.
Cool.
So I'm like, oh, how what a tough day at the office. I don't know how I'm going to decide.
What a tough day at home that's going to be.
Yeah, it's like, how do you decide which one to drive? But no, I mean, those cars, I mean, as an enthusiast, I always look forward to driving, even though they don't get the kind of views that something like this car would get or a RAV4 would get. But then, like, next week, we're actually going to Toyota HQ Confidential for their big reveal of, like, I think 9 or more different Toyota and Lexus models. So
did you see this morning they just dropped the news on the CHR?
I saw that, yes. Yeah. Which I'm shocked that they're bringing it back.
Like, yeah.
Like, why have a coupe version of the BZ?
Yeah, Z-Forks. It's a little weird. I don't know if you saw, but it's cool. Like, it's going to NACS, the North American Charging Standard.
I saw that, yeah.
That's super cool. Mm-hmm. 290 miles of range.
Yep, and 338 horsepower, which I was like, finally, Toyota. Finally, they're getting with the program
putting
here.
Some power in there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great thing how Toyota's, you know, upgrading their EVs. Like, the charging has been improved, the NACS plug, the power, the range is now much more competitive. I'm still not sold on the looks of the car. The refresh for the BZ and then the CHR, I'll wait until I see it in person, but I'm hoping as well next week we're going to see the new RAV4.
Like, that's, oh, that would be cool.
That's something that, you know, people have been waiting for. That's the best seller in the segment, so I'll be curious to see if Toyota actually allows us to film that one next week.
That would be really cool, yeah. I mean, God, that's the best-selling car in the U.S.
Right.
So it would be huge news. You're also going to go drive some really cool Bentleys, right?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to be back in Bozeman in like maybe 3 weeks because Bentley's doing like a full lineup drive of 2026 models, and supposedly they're going to introduce a new variant of the Bentayga from what I hear.
Oh, cool.
But then we're also driving the new plug-in hybrid powertrain, but the detuned version. So like not the 760 plus horsepower version, which was overkill. But yeah, no, it's actually my first Bentley event. And then we're going to be, I guess, together on the Defender Octa event.
That's going to be really cool in Denver. Yeah. When you say detuned, what is it called? Is it called the detuned?
I don't think they called it that. They just said it's their latest plug-in hybrid powertrain that's less powerful than the speed.
It's called the Bentley Flank Spur No Balls.
Right?
Oh, wow. That's a bold move.
Yeah, this terrain guy just was like upset that you're in a Tiguan, so he's like, I'm going to cut this guy off.
That's funny. No, I'm really excited for that Land Rover program. I think that'll be really cool. And I think they're doing it like in Western Colorado or maybe the it's going to be the details I'm not sure on, but I know that they'll do a cool job with it.
Well, I'm just excited to be back in Denver for a program. It's been a while since I've been in your neck of the woods for a program.
Yeah, so. Well, they usually, it's funny, when these companies pick these drives, usually they're at sea level because the cars are faster.
Yep.
And usually they're like in someplace sunny because journalists are fickle and grumpy.
Oh, yes.
But it's cool that they're kind of branching out a little. Like, Bozeman's a really neat place to hold an event.
Right.
And you can't see it today because it's cold and rainy, but
exactly.
Everybody tells me it's amazing here. And it's also kind of an interesting mix of like luxurious and a little country. It's a cool place.
Yeah, no, I mean, this place, it's been a while since I've been here, but the weather when it's really good is a beautiful place to visit and see. And plus Yellowstone is not far from here.
Have you been to Yellowstone?
I have not, but Bentley apparently is taking us to on a drive route through Yellowstone National Park.
Oh, so that's awesome.
I'm actually kind of excited.
That's going to be really cool. What about press cars? Anything cool? You said Artura. I think we're getting Artura coming up as well.
Yeah, it seems like McLaren has been, I've seen other colleagues of ours, you know, offering that or getting that as well for a couple days, but
you always have some cool stuff at the office.
For the most part, I mean, my press, like I pull cars from the DC fleet, which I would say is probably like third or fourth best, because there's like LA is the best, then Detroit, then New York, and then maybe DC, and so forth. Like, so there are some decent cars because now we're going into the warmer weather, so there's actually some more fun cars. But no, I think that's pretty much the only thing I can think of. I have some 4Runners scheduled. There's like three in the fleet, so I haven't had a chance to spend a week with the 4Runner yet. But no, I mean, other than that, it's just the usual array of like getting, you know, the cars that we've drive on the first drives, and then they send it to us for a week later on so we can do a follow-up video, which is probably the same thing you guys do.
Yeah, same thing. Did my dad tell you I bought my dream car?
No. What did you buy?
I bought I sold a bunch of stuff and I've been saving up, and I bought an Aston Martin. Did you know that?
Wait, is it a Vantage?
It is,
it's
yeah.
It's that black Vantage?
It's the black one, yeah.
Okay, but that was the company car, so now it's yours?
It was, yeah. So it's a 2007 Vantage. Okay. When I was a kid, my dad had a press loaner of one in 2009, and it was just like, I fell in love with it. But of course, like, I was 12, and there's no way we could.
You were 12 in 2009?
I was 12.
Oh my God, that makes me feel old.
You were 14 in 2009.
Oh, thank you, Tommy. No, I was in college.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was like 20.
That's funny. Yeah, and then, so it was $32,000.
Okay.
And I absolutely love it. So that, that's what I've been really excited about.
So that's yours now.
It is mine.
How does your wife like that car?
She thinks it's very cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think she's stoked that I spent so much money on a car.
But now you can say, honey, we own an Aston Martin.
That's right. She calls it the James Bond car, which is...
Very, very appropriate.
Do you know that Tate McRae song, Sports Car?
I don't think so.
Do you know that song, Cole?
No. I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
Well, that's horribly embarrassing. But anyway, it's this pop song right now. That's the song she associates with it. But yeah, so hopefully it doesn't cost me $1 million a year in maintenance.
I'll be keeping my fingers crossed for you that it doesn't break down.
And there was just, I'm kind of bummed that there was just an Aston Martin program in Palm Springs or something for the new V8 Vantage.
I saw that. I was not invited to that. But
That would have been a fun one to... Mm-hmm. To check out.
Was your dad on that one?
No, Nathan got invited to that one directly, I think. Okay. Yeah, so he was on that one. But that would have been a cool one.
You could have brought your old one.
I could have. Be like, look at the car that's cheaper than a Camry versus your $300,000 car.
Exactly.
Well, Sofiane, thank you so much for coming on our little podcast here.
Absolutely.
And if folks want to find more of you...
Yeah, you can head over to Redline Reviews on our YouTube channel. We're also on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, and all the other stuff.
And if you want to see less of Sofiane, Auto Buyer's Guide is your place to go.
Yes.
No, Sofiane is the best.
Oh, thanks, Tommy.
Check him out, Redline Reviews. He does the best reviews online. Now we'll go back to the studio, Cole. All right, everybody. So that's all we've got for you today.
Yeah, it's been the special TFL Car Chat episode of Grumpy Old Man.
That's right.
I was
going
to say Grumpy Old Men, but you're going to say it's Grumpy Old Man, which is me, and I'll put my hand up on that. I could be the Grumpy Old Man.
And I said I agree with a lot of things you said, like the door handles, terrible, right? I think that those should always be just mechanical and physical. But we'd love to hear your input, and I'm sure you're going to give it anyways in the comment section below.
You know, and this is also Grumpy Old Man speak, but you know, 10 years from now, somebody is going to be really struggling with fixing one of those door handles.
I agree.
And paying a lot of money.
That's true.
And that's one of those features that if it doesn't work,
you're going to be pretty miserable.
You're not getting in the car and driving anywhere.
Yep, that's exactly
right. Or you're getting in the car on the passenger side and crawling over to the driver's side, which gets really old, or crawling through the window, which could get really old really quick.
That's exactly right. All right, folks, let us know what you think and head over to alltfl.com if you want to find more podcasts.
Yeah, and if you want to listen to a more, less grumpy podcast, head on over to Tommy and the team's newest podcast called Carish. Where are you the car or are you the ish?
I'm becoming the ish, but I started as the car. But it's Jen, Mary, Case, and I. We talk about everything car. So check out Carish every other Wednesday.
Ciao.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.